a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. House local governments will come to order. Prior to getting started, we want to welcome everybody in the audience and on the internet, and we are blessed that our secretary, Jeanette, has had a, well, she's a little ill, and we do have a nice replacement. But with that, Mr. Secretary, could you please honor us and call the roll?
Fikert, Klocek, Shrimp, Magstead, Munsterman.
Yep.
Yeah. Nelson, Olson.
Here.
Roush.
Yep.
Tarno.
Present.
Olson.
Yes, I
Venner.
Am here.
Cronin. Kirkerby.
Here.
Mr. Chair, there's a... No, there's not a... There's not a quorum.
We should have seven.
Really?
Could be eight.
Okay. Well, somebody did answer. We have a quorum.
By the skin, yes. Thank you. Prior to getting started, we are delighted. Our last 2 weeks of session, we do have two new pages. Could you please come up and identify yourself? Just hit that old button on there.
Just my name. Hi, I'm Nikki Romaine. I'm from Rapid City.
Nikki, what school do you go to?
Repsy Christian.
My name is Jordan Rohrbach, and I'm from Aberdeen, and I go to Aberdeen Christian School.
Welcome, and thank you, both of you. I'm very appreciative for what you're I would appreciate anybody just leaving their phone on, or not. We do have I'm going to make one minor adjustment. I'm going to move Senate Bill 128 immediately following Senate Bill 22. Anything else to come before this board prior to taking off?
Mm-hmm. Approving the minutes.
Oh, you'd like to approve the minutes. I know everybody's had the opportunity to review and take a look at our minutes from last Thursday. Mr. Tolson, motion to approve. Second by Representative Munsterman. Comments on that? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Minutes are in fact approved. We'll start at the top of our calendar. Proponent testimony in Senate Bill 22, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the vacation or the change of location of county and township highways on school and public lands.
Good morning.
Jared Johnson, how are you this morning?
I am good, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, and members of the committee. I am Jared Johnson. I'm Commissioner of School and Public Lands. And before you is Senate Bill 22. Senate Bill 22 passed out of Senate Transportation and unanimously on the consent calendar over to your body, if you will. What this bill does is that it allows us to have access to school lands. We will spray parcels of property across the state for weed and pests, and time to time we have an issue on getting access on those acres. And so we looked at our statute and says, well, gosh, you know, how exactly do we proceed and what's our policy when we do so? And what we discovered is that back in 89, as far as we could tell, the language before you, and when that was last looked at, it carved out school and public lands. Well, we thought it made sense to put it back in. So what we did is we just basically struck out the language there. We had worked with Mr. Bob Wilcox of the counties and towns and townships and had a great discussion with them and talked about the pros and cons of doing so. And what we discovered is that they supported us in our bill. And it's before you today as on your calendar. Thank you. I stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Rock solid proponent testimony. Additional proponent testimony, Senate Bill 22.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Dick Howard with the South Dakota Association of Towns and Townships. I rise in support of this bill. We think Senate Bill 22, as originally drafted, was a good bill. We think that it makes good sense that the school and public lands can get to their property to spray weeds, inspect it, and do whatever else is necessary. What are their management practices to maximize the value of that land for the students of South Dakota? You'll note that there were some amendments added over in the Senate, and those were amendments that we had proposed just to update and clarify an old law that was passed prior to 1939, dealing with the authority to vacate and change locations of highways. The language that was put in Senate Bill 22 on lines 10 and 12 of page 1 and lines 1 and 2 of page 2 are exactly the same language that was in House Bill 1122 that came through your committee and passed the House last week 68-2. So we support the bill and the as amended and ask for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 22. Any other proponents on Senate Bill 22? Seeing none, is there opponents to Senate Bill 22? Any opposition on Senate Bill 22? Seeing none, this committee will cease public testimony. Turn it over to committee questions. Sure. Representative Torno.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Howard. Mr. Howard, having dealt with a lot of condemnation cases, and for years and years having dealt with 3118.3, I can't believe how many times this year I've seen amendments to 3118.3. Here's my question to you. Where do these amendments square with the other amendments I've seen floating around on different bills with 3118.3? Does it square up? Are those other bills dead? Where are we at?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torno, the only other bill that I'm familiar with that deals with 3118.3 is House Bill 1122, which passed through this committee and passed the House last week. And it was exactly the same as Senate Bill 22, except it did not have the part that deals with this, for the purpose of this section, public land does not include any school in public lands. That part was not included in it. The other parts of House Bill 1122 is the same as the language in Senate Bill 22 here in lines 10, 12 on the first page and lines 1 and 2 on the second page. I'm not familiar with any other bills dealing with 3118.3 that's going through.
The only other bill I'm thinking about, and I see Representative Sigtestad here, it seemed to me there was a bill that said, or township supervisors who may vacate roads under their jurisdiction. Is that a different bill that I'm thinking about?
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 1122 was Representative Sigtestad's bill. Yep.
Additional committee questions. Representative Betty Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Jared Johnson.
Jared Johnson.
Okay, thank you, Jared. As somebody living in the county with the most school and public lands in the whole state, I'm a little concerned here. Does this just apply to highways, or is it all roads?
To my understanding, Mr. Chairman, if I may, to my understanding, I'm not sure on that. I know that the way that we see this thing is that it allows us basically to use this verbiage that grants us access to section lines, keeps roads that are minimally maintained open to our access for us to get to those areas, basically, to take care of. I don't know if it deals with what you would ask. I'm not sure. I don't know. I guess if I may, Mr. Chairman, the reason I'm saying that is because I'm not, when we drew this up, it was just to allow us access to the trust lands as much as other public entities have them, just for management concerns.
Okay, well, thank you. Could I have one more question of Bob Wilcox? I saw him just walk in.
We if we could just let the records reflect that Mr. Wilcox was not a proponent testimony, and we're going to trust that Representative Betty Olson's question is germane to the Senate bill in front of us. Representative Betty Olson, your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will certainly try. Mr. Wilcox, did you hear the question when you walked in?
Mr. Chairman. Representative Olson, no, I did not.
Okay, well, my
question was bragging about all the property that she has in Harding County that is 100% pertainable to this. Go right ahead.
My question is, does this apply just to highways, or is it all roads, this bill?
Mr. Chair, it applies to all the roads. Mr. Chair, may I... Now we're closed, so I better not. Thank you.
I wonder if Mr. Wilcox could expound on that just a little to clarify it in my mind.
Mr. Chairman,
do you care to expound on that?
I can sure expound on it if I would, and I apologize for being tardy. Representative Olson, we were on the ground floor with the Mr. Johnson on this issue early on during session, and we have gotten this proposal out to our members, in fact, and we do, we certainly are here because of the fact that we're okay with the bill itself.
Additional committee questions on Senate Bill 22. Discussion and
or pass.
Thank you. Motion to pass by Representative Venner. Second by Representative Roush. Representative Venner, any comments on that motion do pass on Senate Bill 22?
No.
I like that input. That is the motion before you to send Senate Bill 22 down to the House floor on a do pass motion. That is the motion. Final action. Secretary will call the roll.
Feigert, Klocek, Schrempf, Magstad, Munsterman.
Aye.
Nelson, Olson.
Aye.
Roush.
Aye.
Turno.
Aye.
Tolson.
Aye.
Benner.
Aye.
Cronin. Kirkerby.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there were 7 ayes, 6 excused.
Senate Bill 22, going down the House floor and do pass motion. With just 7 members here, it's a little awkward to ask for anything else. Representative Tolson, in case this is pulled off of consent, excuse me, can you carry this in our caucus? Representative Roush, question?
I would move consent. Second.
Any objections to moving consent on Senate Bill 22? It is on consent. Well, Representative Tolson, just in case this is pulled off consent, can you carry this in our caucus? And I will get a member from the other party, just in case as well. Thank you. Next on our agenda, Senate Bill 70, an act to revise the procedures for filing referred laws, initiated constitutional amendments. Representative Sigstad. Representative Roush, I am going to move 128 immediately following Senate Bill 70. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 70.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the esteemed local House Local Government Committee. I'm David Sigistad, representative District 1. And first of all, I'd like to thank the Secretary of State for allowing me to carry this in the House side of the chamber. What does Senate Bill 70 do? Senate Bill 70 updates and clarifies language relating to the initiative and referendum process in South Dakota. Current law is confusing and spread among several statutes. Only minor changes have been made to the process, which the other proponent testimony will speak to. Senate Bill 70 also updates and clarifies the formation of and campaign finance filings of the ballot question committees. Building on the success of the Secretary of State's new online campaign finance system, Senate Bill 70 does what I think is the most important part of the bill. It allows for the electronic filings of campaign finance statements. So with that, I would urge your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 70 and would be available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Additional proponents on Senate Bill 70. Secretary of State Gant, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jason Gant, Secretary of State. Thank you, Representative, for giving an overview there. To get down and dirty and not scare anyone that we're not doing any major changes on how initiated measures or initiated constitutional amendments or how referred laws get onto the ballot. The percentages for how many signatures are needed, the basic process stays the same. What we encountered this past year, we, of course, had two different ballot question petitions being circulated in the state. One, of course, was a referred law from last session, and the second one was the 1% sales tax increase. And, of course, both of them qualified to be on the ballot for the 2012 election. However, going through the process of us fully understanding how the law is written and how we are to educate the public on beginning these types of petition drives, we ran into some confusion where everything was just kind of lumped into a couple different paragraphs. Well, what we have done with Senate Bill 70 is we've really split it out so we have our set procedures on initiated measure, set procedures on initiated constitutional, and then set procedures on a referred law. And that's where you will see how we've set up bullet points on what is needed. It really helps clarify how the process works so that you don't need to hire a lawyer should you want to try and begin a petition drive statewide. Now, I will reference a couple of additions that we have made. One of them is the campaign finance portion, which you'll notice on page 2, line 1, this is where we're requiring a statement of organization, which is that basic campaign finance form that you've all filled out, which says the name of your committee, your chairman, your treasurer, all that information. We want it very clear in law that when you begin your petition drive, that at that point, after my office says, yes, your petition is correct, you may begin circulation, that it's at that point that they fill out their statement of organization for campaign finance. The second change is where we had two different deadlines this past year for initiated measure versus a constitutional amendment. One was the first Tuesday in November. The second one was the second Tuesday in November. So we've clarified that to match the Constitution, so it's always a uniform day that one year before the general election. Secondly, for an initiated measure or initiated constitutional amendment, we added the language to where there's a form. The Attorney General's explanation must be provided to everyone who signs a petition. We want that form to be approved by the Secretary of State's office. We're not approving the wording or anything that the Attorney General has done. We just want to see what that form is that they're going to be handing out to all the people who sign the petition. It gives us the opportunity to have a copy of that, to put it on the website, and so that should we receive questions from the public about, I didn't get a piece of paper or I did get a piece of paper, we have that information in the office. The other changes, as I mentioned, which start on page 4, is where we repeal the old laws, but essentially we've built that into those three different areas. The next change is some money that we're trying to save for the counties, which you'll see on page 5, line 16, where we're allowing the county auditor to email the ballot question explanations instead of having to instead of only being able to mail it. Now they can mail it or email it. The next section clarifies those ballot question committees, like I mentioned, that they need to file that when they begin the petition process. The same rules apply for anyone who's going to be in opposition to a ballot question committee or an additional proponent. Those are the same rules, and those will not change with this bill. And those rules, of course, are if you raise or spend $500, you must file with the office. The next change on page 7, line 10, is where we're changing the filing dates for when ballot question committees must file with the office. Today, they must file a mid-year, which, of course, would be July 1. They must file a pre-general, which is going to be last couple of weeks in October, and then they must file a year-end. We're going to change that so it's a pre-primary, pre-general, and then a year-end, which puts ballot question committees on the same level as a political action committee or a political party. It'll make it cleaner when we're talking to the public about when are reports filed with the office. This way, they're all filed at the same time period. The last change, well, I should note, on page 8, line 6, changing that from a Class 1 to a Class 2 misdemeanor, that must have been a typo a number of years ago when this law went into place, because everywhere else through campaign finance it's a Class 2 misdemeanor. So we're not trying to increase the penalty here. We're trying to make it uniform with all other campaign finance violations. Lastly, Section 12 on page 8, that is where we're going to allow candidates, political action committees, political parties to file their campaign finance reports electronically. Right now, you are required by law to put that on paper, sign it, and mail it to my office. With the new campaign finance system we have, we want to eliminate that paper and allow you to click submit, and you're good to go. With that, Mr. Chairman, I probably talked way too long on a bill that you're just dying to put on consent, so I will sit back and wait for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Very good proponent testimony. Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 70. Any other proponent testimony on Senate Bill 70? Seeing none, is there opposition to Senate Bill 70? Any opponents to speak against Senate Bill 70? Seeing none, this committee will cease public input. Turn it over to committee questions or discussion and or action on Senate Bill 70. Representative Roush.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move due pass on Senate Bill 70.
Thank you. Motion is second to send Senate Bill 70 down the House floor and a due pass motion. Comments on that motion?
I think the Secretary did an excellent job, and there's no reason to add to that.
Representative Betty Olson, did I cut you off, or do you have any comments on that? That motion, due pass, Senate Bill 70, send it down the House floor. Additional comments, discussion? Seeing none, that is the motion before you to send Senate Bill 70 down to the House floor and due pass motion. Secretary will call a roll.
Feikert, Klocek, Schrempf, Magstad, Munsterman,
aye.
Nelson, Olson,
aye.
Roush,
aye.
Torno,
aye.
Tolson,
yes.
Benner,
yes.
Cronin, Kirkerby,
aye.
Mr. Chair, there were 7 ayes, 6 excused.
Any opposition? Consent calendar. Next proponent testimony is Senate Bill 128, an act to revise certain provisions concerning elections. Senator Lederman, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I see that the House of Representatives still has you mired as the chairman of local government over here.
I'm not sure if that's an appropriate statement or not, but continue on.
As a former member of the House Local Government Committee, I would like to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak in front of you today and talk about a bill that originally started out actually as an online voter registration bill, and we had made some changes to it. But now the main language of Senate Bill 128 would give county auditors the option of maintaining voter registration records in paper or electronic format. Currently, some county auditors have already digitized their voter registration files, but still maintain a paper copy because the law doesn't give them explicit permission to maintain them only in electronic format. SB 128 would also clean up and clarify other sections in the election code. For example, it removes a requirement that the Secretary of State shall send an envelope to county auditors for the return of election results. It also removes a requirement that the chairman or central committee of each political party get 5 copies of the voter registration file at cost, and it matches language for rulemaking authority of the Board of Elections with 12-1-9. I thank you for your time, and I urge your favorable support of Senate Bill 128. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lederman. Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 128. Welcome back, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jason Gant, Secretary of State. Senate Bill 128, there's really nothing super exciting in there. It's just amazing on some of the things that we tend to find when we are going through the election code, like an example of this envelopes. If I send out green ones and they send back brown ones, I'd have to deny that. To me, that just seems silly. We'll still do all the education to make sure everything is clarified there. However, There's no need for that type of legislation. And also to clarify or further explain the voter registration list, we're happy to sell that. If a county chairman wants 50 copies of it, we'll happily give 50 copies and charge whatever it is, $50 for each copy. So we're happy to do as many as anyone requests. It is a revenue generator for the state and for the counties, so we're happy to sell that to candidates, political parties, and those types of interested individuals. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 128. Any other proponents on 128? Seeing none, is there opposition to Senate Bill 128? Anybody speaking against Senate Bill 128? Seeing none, this committee will cease public testimony, turn it over to committee questions, discussion, and or action on Senate Bill 128. Representative Torno.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a motion to amend, and I would ask the pages to hand out the amendment. It's 128FB.
Could, Representative Torno, until we get that. Or do we do have a second to it? Oh, he got second by Representative Venner. Thank you. Fire away, Representative Torno.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I would urge your consideration of Amendment 128FB, which really does no harm to the bill as proposed and pitched by the good Secretary of State and Senator Lederman. What this would simply do is add a Section 6 that falls under the election provisions, and it deals with recounts. And as you look through the amendment, you'll see that currently, and this would not change the fact that currently, if an election is within 2% of the total votes cast, that a recount may be, it falls into that possible recount category. I call this the skin in the game amendment. And that is that knowing that recounts historically over many, many years typically flip, you know, no more than a handful of votes at best. I know in Minnehaha County, I think over the last approximately 12 recounts, no more than 4 votes have ever flipped. This would say, but understanding that recount margin a lot of times is up to 200 or 250 votes. What this amendment would do is it would say to folks that are facing that, being in that election recount window, that if the vote margin is more than 40 votes, they can still request the recount, but they need to post a bond of $500. And we can talk about the dollar amount, you know, that could maybe be lowered or adjusted or whatever. But the idea being that those recounts cost our county officials a significant amount of time and money. I know, for instance, in Minnehaha County, it's a full-day process where, of course, and I won't go through the whole recount board process, but you go out and get an outside board, and it is a, you know, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Proposition that involves, you know, multiple members of county auditor staff and the like. And this would say that, again, if that potential candidate is within the window, but it's more than 40 votes, that they be willing to post an individual personal bond, cash bond, of $500. And what the amendment goes on to do is says that if they are not, that person is not later declared to be the winner, that is that it changes the results, that bond will go directly to help offset some of the costs that the county undertakes for the recount. If, in fact, they are the winner, and it flips, you know, 45 or 50 votes or whatever, that they get their bond back, so it would cost them nothing. The other thing it does is if it's a smaller county and the costs are much more de minimis, say that the total cost was calculated at $250, that anything remaining would go back to that candidate so that they are only covering the costs. The other thing it does, I think fairly importantly, is that it asks that when that candidate files that petition, right now they just need to sign a form that says they request the recount and they believe the results will change. This provision says, again, sort of along the lines of skin in the game, that candidate has to swear under oath that they, I would say, without using legal terms, that they verily believe that the results will change. And here's the reason. Forget about if it's 42 votes or 45 votes. Let's say, you know, the window is 220 votes. You know, if the difference is really 218 votes, I think it would be very difficult for a candidate to swear under oath that they verily believe a recount will change the results of that election. So I appreciate Senate Bill 128. It's dealing with the various cleanup provisions in the election code. I think this recount issue is something that we've seen in Minnehaha County, and I think other counties that should be addressed. And I'd urge your favorable consideration of the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Torno. That discussion item on the amendment 128FB. Representative Torno, did you share this amendment with the proponents?
I did.
Thank you. Additional committee questions on that amendment? I do have one, if I could. I guess in this question specifically be to the Secretary of State. Secretary Gant, you had the opportunity to review this amendment?
Yes.
I guess my question to you, would you consider the merits or the attempts on this amendment on 128 to be favorable to the ultimate passage of Senate Bill 128?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chairman. I did have a chance to review this right before we started on Senate Bill 70. I have a number of concerns with this that I mentioned to the representative. First of all, we don't require any money to be a candidate for office in South Dakota. If you have no money to your name and you go out there and you knock on doors by yourself and you get your petition signed and you get your name on the ballot and you go out there and convince everyone to vote for you, you can win an election and spend $0. However, if this were to pass, we're then requiring that an individual, a candidate, would have to come up with, whether it stays $500 or what have you, but required to come up with some cash. We don't require that. I mean, if there is a mistake, that's why we have recounts, so that when there is a situation where the election is so close that a few votes could change the outcome, that is their right as a candidate that this is needed for a recount. And it shouldn't matter what it costs. Let's think back to 2002 with the Tim Johnson and John Thune race. I mean, that came down to 524 votes. If there would have been a recount there, that's something the state should pay for. I mean, that's less than one vote per precinct, all of South Dakota. So I have a concern there. Secondly, with this coming in during 2012, we would have two different sets of rules for the elections coming up in 2012. We would have the current law for our primary election, and then we would have this change for the recount for the general election. I have concerns about that as well. We really want to have our elections run uniform for the primary to the general. So I'm very willing to work on this next year when it's not an election year, so we can get the law so it's very clear. But I do have great concerns on the $500 bond and setting that up into have the possibility of someone not be able to get a recount because they couldn't raise the $500. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Additional discussion. Proposed amendment 128FB. Representative Tolson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any election, if there is a recount, I feel that if there is a recount and we have law, it's no fault of the winner, or it's no fault of the loser. It's just in law now that we have a recount, and to put a burden on the proposed loser because he didn't have enough votes would put an undue burden on that person. Thank you,
Representative Benner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question for Secretary Gant. given your understanding right now, I understand you haven't had a chance to look in detail, but as you understand it right now, would this in fact violate statute, though, if we did require a bond today from a candidate for this purpose?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, another statute doesn't come to mind that this would conflict with. Like I said, I've had it for 5 minutes, but it's just that the dollar amount. I know there's nothing else anywhere about dollars, so.
Representative Roush.
Thank you. I would have a question for the Secretary as well. Secretary Gant, how many times is there a request for recounts that you're aware of in a normal election cycle, like, say, the primary? How many requests would there be for recounts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can think of at least a handful that we had in the 2010 primary. I remember we even had recounts on precinct committee man and precinct committee woman races. So, yeah, I would say there's probably five or six.
Follow-up. Now, those recounts, are they triggered automatically by statute, or were they requested and then followed up on? How does that?
They were probably requested. I'm trying to remember if that precinct one was by one vote, but I don't remember. If I had a regular bill, I apologize. I would have all kinds of statistics for you, but I don't have that all right off the top of my head. But I know there's a handful, so.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I might, would I ask those same questions of Representative Tornow with the amendment?
What was it?
Well, it was, I was looking at it. Are you aware of how many times that this would come into play? I mean, is it? Do you have any idea of the number of recounts that that happen in an elections cycle?
Yeah, I've just generally looked at it in the past years, I guess, that I've run. It seems like, yeah, there's typically, I would say, 3 to 5 potential recounts, and it seems like that's whittled down by people making a choice or not down to 1 or 2 actual recounts. In Minnehaha County in 2010, there were 2 possible recounts at least. One went to recount, the other they chose not to.
Representative Munsterman.
This would probably be for the Secretary and Representative Tornow, excuse me. When you reflect back to the recounts that were, when they were recounted, what was the vote variation? I mean, are we getting pretty close, or are we seeing wide variations or swings? Or,
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we're not seeing great swings. If you swing 10 votes, that's enormous. It's usually less than 5. I know I was involved in a recount years ago, and it was, I think, 7 votes that switched. And that was crazy that it was that many. With the technology that we have with the scanners, if you haven't been to the courthouse on election night, I would highly recommend it to see how those machines work, and they scan those ballots so quick. It's just... it's only those little dots, so.
Mr. Mann, you had another question, or?
Nope. That'll work.
Representative Enner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 2 questions, I think, Secretary of State. And I apologize. I may have missed it in your answer. I tried to catch you. 2 questions. First of all, you alluded, or a statute was alluded to with regard to triggering recounts. Is there any,
nope.
Does statute ever trigger a recount?
Mr. Chairman, no, it does not.
Okay, and then the second question, a follow-up to a piggyback on Representative Munsterman's. If you look back, how many times in the last 5 years has a recount actually overturned an election? In other words, the result has changed. I mean, what's the percentage of that? Has that ever happened in your recollection?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Boy, I'm just...
Thank you.
It's definitely possible, but I can't remember.
And just please let the records reflect that the Secretary of State's only been in office for 14 months, so we probably haven't had a lot of elections going through there. Additional committee discussion on that Amendment 128FB. That is a voice vote. All those in favor of that amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
That amendment failed.
Roll call.
All right, I'm sure that you're supported. All those. Secretary, call the roll.
Feikert, Kloschek, Shrimp, Magstead, Munsterman,
no.
Nelson, Olson,
no.
Roush,
no.
Tarno,
aye.
Tulson,
no.
Benner,
aye.
Cronin, Kirkaby,
no.
Mr. Chair, there were five nays, two yeas, five nays.
Thank you. That amendment was defeated. Additional discussion or action on Senate Bill 128?
Sure. Sure.
Representative Torno.
I have a motion to amend. If I could get the pages passed out. It's, for the record, it's Amendment 128FC. And this is, as it's being passed out, I will say this is me having the crystal ball of maybe where the Secretary of State might be. And I think this is a fair compromise to that. So I'd move 128FC.
The next 30 seconds, I will entertain a second. And I do have a second on that Amendment 128FC. Representative Tornell, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, I think 128FC addresses the very concerns you heard from the Secretary of State. I appreciate his comments and concerns about the $500. I would say, just for technical purposes, as you look in the amendment, I think we would you need to strike the word, what we're underlining, when it says sworn on the, delete the word the. So it should read, after being first sworn on such candidate's oath. And here's my thinking, and again, I call this sort of the skin in the game, to a different extent, skin in the game amendment. And that is, right now, I would agree with the comments that have been made before, there is no triggering statute that says there is a recount. What there is, it is a requirement that the person simply sign a piece of paper saying, I believe the results will change. This says, to whatever, you know, extent the person believes in their own oath, that they have to swear and make a notarized statement, swearing on their oath that they, again, verily believe that the results will change in when they're requesting a recount. So again, it takes the money issue out. It simply says that they have to step up and examine themselves, if you will, and say, do I believe if it's within this window of 210 votes and we have a 202 vote differential, that I can swear under oath that I believe this recount will change the election results. And I think it's, again, I believe it's a fair compromise. I hope you can support 128FC.
Thank you, Representative. Pending amendment in front of you, 128FC. Any additional committee discussion? Question, Representative Roush.
I was just curious if I could ask the Secretary's response to this amendment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, again, we would have two different sets of laws for our elections in 2012. For the primary election, this wouldn't be a factor. For the general election, it would be a factor. I don't think that's right when we're talking about our statewide elections. Secondly, I think you have to think about it if you yourself were in this situation as a candidate. If you come down to votes where, well, I mean, why did John Thune at the time not ask for a recount? There are a lot of variables that go into that situation. I do have concerns when Representative, you'd mentioned how that they would, I forget how you worded it, but something about where you really believe that the recount could change things. You don't know that. I mean, we try. The county auditors do an amazing job with their counting procedures, with all of their election procedures. I just don't know if it's needed to have this type of sworn document that you swear under oath that you believe a recount could change the results. I have not heard any issues with people requesting a recount that they were denied for any reason. The law is pretty clear. You're within that 2%. You have the option. I don't know what is gained by having a sworn oath there. So then I'd go back to, why do we want to have different standards for our 2012 elections? Very happy to work on, I'm sure we probably have many issues with our recount laws. Keep in mind, we haven't had a statewide recount since 1978. So that's something that's on our list to dust off and see what we need to do to change and to be ready should we have another statewide recount. So, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that you not approve that amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Representative Rausch, follow up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I understand what the representative is after in pursuing these last two amendments. I think I agree in midstream, so to speak, it maybe isn't the wisest thing, but I think there is plenty of opportunity to visit this issue. I just don't think today is the right time to do this with these amendments. I think if somebody's asking for a petition, I think whether they would swear an oath or otherwise, you'd have the same question. They think if they're asking for a recount, I think they already think there's an opportunity for them to have favorable decision in that, so I'm not sure you gain anything by this, but I'd like this to continue, this conversation to continue, and probably draft some decent legislation next year on its own. I think it has some merit for the discussion, but I guess I would ask the committee to resist the amendment.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Tolson.
A question for the good representative from Sioux Falls. May I ask?
I don't know if there's one around. With all due respect.
Wait. I have two questions. The good representative, what would the oath say, and then may I follow it up, and then what would it mean if we did have an oath? What would change?
Thank you for the question. First of all, it would simply be a standard oath. The person hereby deposes and states that upon their belief that they believe the recount will change the results of the election. With all due respect to the Secretary of State, his testimony was that how would they know? They have to make the statement right now. They just make the statement. This would just ask them to, again, I think as I said earlier, sort of look within themselves to say, am I willing to swear on my oath that I believe this, that if I'm at that 210 vote count window and this is 209 votes, do I truly believe and swear on my oath that I believe this recount will flip 210 votes? I think it would give people second thought or pause. I appreciate the Secretary's comments that sometimes people do look within themselves now and make that decision. I think this would just be an added non-monetary request of someone to step forward and make that statement under oath. So that's what it would say. And as far as its meaning, it's simply, I guess, more of a personal issue than anything that they're swearing on their oath. I don't know that anybody's going to be able to challenge them as to perjury because they've stated that belief, because that is their actual belief.
Thank you.
And if I could follow one thing, if I could add, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the comments that, you know, midstream this is coming up. I would urge the committee that, you know, remember, we're down, I think we're one of the shortest sessions we've ever had, at basically 32 regular days. And it isn't like we had this great luxury of day after day of extra days where we could bring these things. And quite honestly, when you see a good vehicle and you know about these issues, that's why it was brought. In a regular 40-day session, you know, it might have been something that could have stood on its own, but we are here now. I also don't believe that having this requirement would change anything from the June primary to the general election, given that, again, the statement is already required right now. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Enner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be brief. Just two comments. Number one, I too don't see how this is going to shake things up that much if we were to adopt this, and yes, the primary would be different than the general, but it seems relatively cut and dried and clear what we've done here. It's not like it's a huge understanding, insurmountable thing to wrap your mind around. And the only other comment I have, I think this is timely, and again, we haven't passed all the legislation yet, but I think there's pretty much a green light in terms of our voting machines and how we have upgraded the way we're going to vote, upgraded the technology and upgraded the chances of error have diminished significantly. I think if what we're trying to do actually comes to pass. And I look as I've said many times, I was 12 years a county commissioner, and I have been there and watched the night of the elections, and I know it's a tremendous machine that we gin up. And I think in the heat of battle, as candidates, I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that taxpayer dollars there's a big pile that gets amassed for every election. That's a big budget issue during election year. So I think this kind of helps us focus where we should focus, and that is, you know, do we really want to, as a candidate, generate that or gin up that machine again for a huge effort that really is probably pointless? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. I thought you did state that you were going to be brief. Additional discussion, that pending amendment 128FC. That is a voice vote. All those in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Secretary, the chair certainly is in doubt. Could you call the roll? The motion before you is on the amendment 128FC. That'll be an aye vote if you support that.
Fikert, Klocek, Schremp, Magstadt, Munsterman.
No.
Nelson, Olson.
Aye.
Rausch.
No.
Tarno.
Aye.
Tolson.
No.
Fenner.
Aye.
Cronin. Kirkaby.
No.
Mr. Chair, there were three ayes, four nays.
Thank you. That was a close one on that amendment. Back to discussion.
Mr. Chair.
And our Representative Scott Munsterman.
I would move to pass on Senate Bill 128.
Second.
Thank you. Second by Representative Olson. Representative Munsterman, you have any comments on that?
I'm all commented out.
Thank you. That is the motion before you. Send Senate Bill 128 down to the House floor in a do pass motion. That is the motion. The Secretary will call the roll on the do pass motion on 128.
Fikert, Klocek, Schremp, Magstadt, Munsterman.
Aye.
Nelson, Olson.
Aye.
Rausch.
Aye.
Tarno.
Aye.
Tolson.
Yes.
Benner.
Aye.
Cronin. Kirkaby.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there were seven ayes, six excused.
Thank you.
So,
no.
Senate Bill 128 is going down to the House floor in a do pass motion. And I think we all better try to be nice and give the prime sponsor in the House a little heads up that there could be some lively discussion on this, and that will be directed to Representative Willison. Yeah, we better keep the amendments. Next, Senate Bill 75. The proponent testimony, an act to revise a determination of fees that may be charged for certain public records. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 75. Seeing none, why don't we just take a little quick little break on Senate Bill 75. Go to proponent testimony and Senate Bill. Representative Turberville, we appreciate that look of confusion. Are you here on a specific bill?
Yes, sir, I
am. All right, proponent testimony and Senate Bill 104. An act to revise certain provisions concerning the investment of public funds. Proponent testimony. Senate Bill 104. Representative Roush.
Go
Thank you. I could have spoken to you individually. I'll go finish signing in, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 104. Representative Turberville, good morning to you. Thank you for attending local governments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Representative Chuck Turberville, District 31, Lawrence County. You may recognize some of the language of House or Senate Bill 104 because we did look at this last year. SDCL 4-5-6.2 is a statute that was enacted in 2011 to allow greater flexibility for investments of public funds. Specifically, it allowed political subdivisions of the state to invest public funds in direct obligations of any county, municipality, or school district, and included bonds issued by the South Dakota Housing Development Authority, the South Dakota Health and Education Facilities Authority, or the South Dakota Building Authority. Senate Bill 104 simply clarifies that the law enacted last year does not limit the investment authority otherwise granted under the laws of the state. And let me give you an example. Political subdivisions of the state have been allowed to invest in bonds issued by the Conservancy District, of the Department of Environmental and Natural Resources for a number of years. This bill would ensure that political subdivisions would continue with these investments. And with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll conclude my presentation. Thank you for your time and attention, and I will stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Turberville. Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 104. Good morning.
Thank you and good morning. Margo Northrup, I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Association of Rural Water Systems. Our organization is made up of various organizations that offer rural water through the state, including water user districts and sanitary districts, which are political organizations of the state. We bring Senate Bill 104 to you just to clarify that the existing statutes in codified law are still in effect, and specifically for water user districts and sanitary districts, they've had the option to invest in conservancy district bonds. There will be a dedicated period this summer for SRF bonds, and so we just want to clarify that we can still invest in those bonds like we have done in the past. I will stand by for any questions at the appropriate time.
Thank you. Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 104. Any other proponents on 104? Seeing none, is there opposition to Senate Bill 104? Any opponents speaking against Senate Bill 104? Seeing none, this committee will cease public testimony, turn it over to committee questions, comments, discussion. Representative Roush.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move do pass.
Second.
Thank you. Move do pass by Representative Roush, second by Representative Tornow. Representative Roush, any comments on that wonderful motion of yours?
No, I think Senator or Representative Turbeville did a great job, and it's just nice clarification, so thank you.
We're all equally impressed, too, Representative Turbeville. Outstanding job. Motion before you, send Senate Bill 104 down to the House floor and do pass motion. Discussion on that. Seeing none, that is a motion before you, send Senate Bill 104 down to the House floor and do pass motion. Secretary will call a roll.
Feikert, Klocek, Schrempf, Magstad, Munsterman,
aye.
Nelson, Olson.
Person
killing
me. Yes.
Roush. Roush. Tornow.
Aye.
Tolson.
Yeah.
Benner.
Aye.
Cronin. Kirkaby.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 7 ayes, 6 excused.
Oh, no. No. I'd oppose that.
Senate Bill 104 is going down the House floor in a due pass motion.
Move consent.
No, we tried.
Oh, you did try.
Yeah.
Okay.
To continue on with our organized chaos, let's try to take a progressive step back onto our agenda. I believe that we do have Senator Krause here as a proponent testimony on Senate Bill 75, which is to bring back your memory. It's an act to revise the determination of fees that may be charged for certain public records. Mr. Wilcox, you're going to help anybody out in here? You can be a proponent on 101? She's still trying to get organized. Well, let's just take a 30-second break. Proponent testimony to former Senator Krause on Senate Bill 75. Good morning to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee, for your patience. Somehow our system broke down. I didn't get a notice that this was before this committee this morning. Senate Bill 75 is an attempt to, it's an open government kind of bill. It's to revise the determination of fees that may be charged for certain public records. And the change is on line 14, saying that no fee may be charged for the electronic transfer of any minutes of a political subdivision board or agency or a political subdivision or the governing board of an agency that levies property taxes that were recorded in the last 3 years. So, in other words, if any minutes are requested by the public and if they're requested in a format that is the same as what is recorded by the entity, then there should be no charge for transferring those minutes. So it's a simple bill. If you have any questions, I will stand by. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 75. Mr. Borderwijk, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. David Borderwijk, registered lobbyist, South Dakota Newspaper Association. We support the bill, Senate Bill 75. Appreciate Senator Krause bringing it forward. As she said, it's simply trying to say that if a government body can email the minutes, send them electronically to a requester, that they should be able to do that without having to charge a fee for doing such, and trying to clarify that a little bit. So with that, we'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Additional proponent testimony. Senate Bill 75. Any other proponents on Senate Bill 75? Seeing none, is there opposition to Senate Bill 75? Anybody speaking against the potential passage of Senate Bill 75? Seeing none, this committee will cease public testimony, turn over to committee questions, discussion, and or action on Senate Bill 75. Representative Enner. Thank you. Second by Representative Betty Olson. Comments on that motion, Representative Enner?
I will be brief. I'm not sure we've had any bill through here where the fees were being removed, and I think that's really a step in the right direction, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, and you're a man of honor with being short. Motion before you to send Senate Bill 75 down to the House floor on a do-pass motion. That is the motion before you. Secretary will call a roll.
Feigert, Klocek, Schramp, Magstead, Munsterman,
aye.
Nelson, Olson,
aye.
Roush,
aye.
Torno,
no.
Tolson,
yes.
Benner,
aye.
Cronin, Kirkaby,
aye.
Mr. Chair, there are six ayes, one nay, six excused.
Thank you. Senate Bill 75 is going down to... I'm good to go with that unless something changes in the next 5 minutes, but it's certainly on the bottom of our calendar right now because it did not receive 7 votes. Unless Representative Torno wants to take a break and...
Sick talk.
Right.
Mr. Chair, unless our committee structure would change by the end of the next bill.
Right. Yep, very good. All right, next let's move on to Senate Bill 101. Proponent testimony, an act to authorize counties to borrow money using promissory notes. Proponent testimony in Senate Bill 101.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Bob Wilcox of the South Dakota County Commission Association. I've actually moved in front of our prime. He is right next door. They are just getting ready to vote as we speak. Yes, is he behind me? Great.
Additional proponent testimony in Senate Bill 101. Welcome, Senator.
Welcome. Sorry to be late. I'm Tom Hansen, Senator from District 22 in Huron, and it's interesting how the state book of laws has evolved. You'll notice instances where a statute is modified, but the modification may actually only be partially complete. Several years ago, Chapter 13 of our code was modified to allow school districts the authority to borrow money on a promissory note. Apparently, the drafting of that legislation did not consider that similar authorization might be appropriate for municipalities, counties, and even townships. A few years later, Chapter 9 was changed. That year, the language gave borrowing authority to municipalities, but no reference to counties. This bill seeks to extend that same authority for borrowing on a promissory note to county government. Section 1 through 5 of the bill proposes adding the same language as found in 13-19-1 through 6, referring to schools, and found in 9-25-12 through 16, referring to municipalities, into Chapter 7-21 for counties. I know that there are others wishing to speak to this bill, in fact, probably already have. But I will stand down and answer questions at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I do want to assure this committee that the prime sponsor carrying this on the House has no intention whatsoever in being a proponent testimony on Senate Bill 101.
Please do so.
Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 101.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Kurt Everson appearing on behalf of the South Dakota Bankers Association. Local banks appreciate the opportunity to provide services to units of local government. Historically, in the case of the counties, those services have been depository in nature only. And if the county commissioners decide that they have a need to borrow some money per Senate Bill 101, then the local banks would be happy to take a look at those kinds of requests on a case-by-case basis. So we encourage the committee's support of Senate Bill 101. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Everson. Additional proponent testimony on 101. Welcome back, Mr. Wilcox.
Good morning again, committee. Bob Wilcox, County Commission Association. We'd like to thank Senator Hansen for bringing forth this legislation, which really does give us another tool in our toolbox to help manage our money on a short-term basis. And so with that, we ask you for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponent testimony on Senate Bill 101. Any other proponents on Senate Bill 101? Seeing none, is there opponents on Senate Bill 101? Anybody desiring to speak in opposition on Senate Bill 101? Seeing none, this committee will cease public testimony on Senate Bill 101. Turn over to committee questions. Are there any questions? Representative Tolson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I have the Mr. Everson come up, please? Yep. Question for him. Just a simple question, and you probably can't answer it, but it's a nice question. What would be the interest rate?
Mr. Chairman. Well, I think it probably depends on the particular county and the particular request for funding. I don't anticipate these are going to be long-term loans. If you look at the language of the bill, it talks about, you know, the sources of funds to repay the loans. My presumption is, I mean, it could be anything from, I think in the Senate when this bill came up, they're talking about refinancing a lease purchase of some grading equipment. So whatever the going rate would be, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Torno, questions on Senate Bill 101?
Question for whomever. I would think the sponsor, but I guess it's up to you. I'm having a little difficulty in Section 1 at lines 9 through 11. Where else but in government would we say that the funds borrowed in this act do not constitute an indebtedness of the county within the meaning of any constitutional or statutory provisions? Where else do we say a debt is not a debt?
I didn't fully understand and hear your question, Representative.
Well, and maybe I'm not fully understanding it, but it's talking about borrowing money, but you're saying pursuant to this act that the borrowing of this money does not constitute an indebtedness of the county within the meaning of any constitutional or statutory provisions or limitations. And I'm not trying to be sarcastic, I'm just trying to figure out where else in government or otherwise do we say the fact that we borrowed money is not an actual indebtedness.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I guess I probably am not going to be able to answer that question fully to your liking either, because the whole philosophy here was that this authorization has been extended to school districts and to municipalities. And the language in this particular, portion of statute dealing with counties is exactly the same language as is found in that that applies to school districts and to municipalities. So if there's some question, then that same question would appropriately be asked in those other entities. And I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's the basis for bringing this piece of legislation forward.
Representative Benner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Please, sir, Senator. My question revolves around lines 22, 23, 24, bottom of page 2 and top of page 3. And my question is, what does it look like exactly if the county goes into default? I can read what it says. It sounds like the county has to focus on only paying this debt and not doing anything else. If I read it right, I'm looking again at lines 22, 23, and 24, and I'm asking the question, what does it look like if the county defaults?
Well, again, I think that, that is the same as if an entity issues a warrant and that it flows to the top of the revenue that is brought forward. So the first revenue would be applied to the payment of the indebtedness. And now you also must remember, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that, there's a lending institution involved. And they have to make the determination as to whether or not they want to extend the credit. And if I may, just a little bit of latitude here as to the reason for bringing this bit of legislation forward is that With the change in the interest rate environment, we have seen situations where, and in fact, in my county, there's some equipment has been purchased under a lease, and I'm not sure that purchase is the exact correct word, but and statute already allows the county to enter into a lease agreement. So, you know, you make the observation that we as a county can save some money if we would be allowed to borrow on a promissory note from my local bank and pay off that lease, which is a benefit to the, you know, to the taxpayers, to the citizens of the county. Now, that situation, that environment doesn't always exist. You know, there are times when the interest rate environment is such that you know, it's not a lot different than we see the number of homeowners that find it to their advantage to refinance their home mortgage because they can have the benefit of a lower rate. And so, you know, it just all falls into place, as Mr. Everson has indicated. You know, as far as the banking industry is concerned, it provides them with an opportunity to extend some, you know, to make some additional loans if the request is there, and the credit worthiness of the borrower. And of course, you know, in county government, there's statutory limitations on the amount that they can borrow. And so really, you have just about all of the safeguards present. And again, you know, the same thing that is, you know, if it's good for the schools and the cities, it should be good for the counties.
Thank you all. And I appreciate your comments, Senator, but when you say that this is typically going to be a short-term loan, I note that at the end of Section 1, though, you're saying that the term cannot be in excess of 5 years. And that's a fairly long period of time. I would think if you were truly focused on the short-term to me would be 180 days or less, or 1 year or less. Why the 5 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, if you're going to take over something like a lease that is already has a extended term, you know, you certainly wouldn't want to pay off a 5-year lease and try to repay it in 90 days. So, you know, there are two different situations that can occur. If it's for a piece of capital investment, then you know, you're going to kind of tie the repayment to the service that's expected in that piece of equipment. Now, if it's for a cash flow situation, which can sometimes occur, you know, your tax revenue mainly comes in May and November, and there could be situations where you have need to, you know, to go to the bank and borrow. In fact, I used to be in the banking business, and I know a little bit about this. And we would sometimes, you know, receive those kinds of requests from, again, primarily from schools then. But, you know, if it's like in the case that's mentioned, in the case where you're going to have the greatest opportunity to realize some benefits because of the interest differential, you know, those are going to be at least – you know, more than a 12-month term.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then I go back, Senator Hansen, then if you're going to take, let's say you are taking on the 5-year lease, and I understand that argument, then why are we saying that that will not constitute an indebtedness of the county under any statutory provision? So you're saying, taking over that lease, you're making those payments now, over the terms of 5 years under statutory provisions, that's not an indebtedness of the county. If it isn't, what is it?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can't answer that other than if we're not satisfied with that in this particular portion of the statute, then we also need to go and revisit the sections of statute dealing with cities and schools.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Munster.
I don't know if this will lend any clarity on that, but I believe what it's referring to, Representative Torno, is that it is not counted towards the total limitation of the debt of that particular governmental entity. And so because it is a more of a short-term vehicle, And for instance, we bought fire trucks in Brookings. We didn't have the money, so we did a lease, but we bought that lease out with a five-year note in order to get us by, and then we were able to actually pay that note off a lot quicker. And so it's a very good vehicle that the schools and the cities have been able to use, and now the counties want to be able to use that, but this won't be counted towards their total debt limit because it is a very short-term type of situation that will be manageable. And typically, it is the capital improvement projects, like you had mentioned, Senator Hansen, you did a very good job of explaining this, by the way, that this is to be used and has been used historically. And I could see where it's very would be very viable for counties to have this same vehicle to be able to get things done that way. So I don't know if that helps you, Representative Torno, or not, but.
Thank you, Representative Munsman. Senator, thank you for the responding to those questions. I think it would be a solid guess on my part to consider holding this bill until Thursday when we get the necessary numbers of votes to do something with it. I think with that, we will plan on meeting local governments 2 days from now on Thursday to, again, bring up 75 and Senate Bill 101. Certainly will allow that brief opportunity for proponents and opponents in either one of those. And I think also immediately following that, we'll have a 5 or 10 minute discussion, if that's even needed, to consider any recommendations that this committee would like to give to the e-board regarding any possible summer studies that may have come up. But with that, we will in fact be meeting on Thursday. We will have two bills, Senate Bill 75 and Senate Bill 101. And if anybody would like to have Representative Torno be down to lunch or something on that day, we might be able to do something on these bills. But with that, we will go to work in 2 days. Chairman would entertain a motion to adjourn. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.